I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Crystal Palace 0, Sunderland 4. Take Sam Allardyce outside the back of Selhurst Park and dispatch of him because he's dead.
What?
My eyes. Now, that's it. He's like that dog in that old yeller, isn't he? Just wow. Put him out of pasture. Well, they didn't put him out of pasture, they shot him in the head.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating the death of Allardyce, I'm just saying metaphorically.
You are. You did just say he's dead.
Well, he is metaphorically dead, isn't he? Now the ghost has been exercised. That doesn't work, does it?
No, that
would mean he'd already died.
Can you imagine if
the Ghostbusters have been into Selhurst Park? He was trapped him.
He
in
must
the trap.
Be on a worse run than Moyes was with us at the beginning of the season. Now at Palace,
well, they've won one before 10 games, so it's not quite as bad. But still pretty bad, can be 4-0 at home to us. Like
the voices there, you can hear Rory and Craig. Craig making a return when we've won.
I'm a good luck charm, good luck
charm. Would you have been on had we not won 4-0?
Yeah, I'm usually better when we lose. I've got more to say. It's not much to say when we're good, is there? Just like, yeah, we're good.
Well, it's a good job it's not just you here then, because we've got Phil Smith from the Sunderland Echo.
Evening all.
He was there.
Well, I don't think any of us were.
No. I was watching it illegally in the pub. So
I was watching
Come at me,
house.
Premier League. Yeah. Come on, bring it on.
Now Quinn would be very disappointed. Well, you know, that kind of behaviour.
I'm happy to disappoint Niall on this occasion.
I'm glad I did. I nearly didn't watch it, actually, and ended up just staying at a pal's house and cracking a beer open. It's well worth it, wasn't it, in the end?
It was, indeed. Did you... So obviously with Phil being there, I mean, what was that like? Has it unfolded before your eyes?
It was unbelievable. Like, because as I was saying to you before we came on, to be honest, I didn't think Sunderland played all that well in the first half. You know,
well, I was saying the same actually. Couldn't keep the ball.
Really struggling. I mean, Palace weren't creating anything. I mean, they were almost as bad as we were on the ball. But. You know, sort of 40 minutes in, you're kind of looking at thinking this is going to be a pretty long and nervy afternoon. And then just moment of utter genius from Undong. You know, he gets the ball, starts advancing towards goal, and with the greatest of respect, you're kind of just waiting for him to mess it up and pass it straight back to Crystal Palace. And on his weight of foot, just absolutely inch perfect. And from there, Palace just completely froze. I think they were just waiting for the half-time whistle and never seen anything quite like it.
It was nice to... you know, kind of felt for the Palace fans in a way, because it's like, you know, we've been there before. And
I would have felt for them, except for they've done it to us. And whenever we've played them at home, their fans are so smug, going on about like people leaving early
that.
And I know every fan, kind of away fan, does that kind of thing. But because Palace are the best fans in the league, trademark, copyright, etc., because a couple of divvies jump up and down in the corner,
they wouldn't believe in the trademark and copyright. That's too modern football for the Holmesdale Ultras. Yeah, they wouldn't believe in trademarking and copyrighting things on their flags. Yeah. Flags for the people.
Yeah,
by the people.
That whole thing with them was a bit weird, where they like wrote a letter saying like there's not enough. The sale of merely Jednak or something, and they weren't consulted or something like that. And it was like, we haven't got any enough homegrown players in the team. And
of course, because Millie Jedinak from Australia, pretty close to Selhurst Park.
Good local boy.
Yeah, he's from Croydon, man. Definitely.
I think Julian Speroni's there with their local homegrown talent.
They were very, very, well, to be fair, I can't believe he's not in, because Hennessy, I mean,
he's dreadful,
going on to that first goal. I mean, would you have been screaming for a foul if that had been on the Sunderland goalkeeper?
Yeah, you would have done. No, you might not have been correct, but you were.
Yeah. Yeah. So at first glance, yeah. I was hesitant waiting to celebrate the goal in my front room because I was waiting for the referee to blow up just because you expect them to that. But when you see it again, it's like Kelvin Davis-esque, really.
I haven't said that. Like, I do that with every single, like, even the third and fourth goals, I was just waiting for the offside. I was like, nah. Yeah. And then Dong's, I was like, something's not quite right here. Like,
and Dong's was a bit of a trick because it went in off the post. So I was like looking and going, is that it? Has that gone in?
Is that round the back of the net?
Couldn't have gone in. It couldn't possibly be 2-0 up. I mean, Kone's goal as well. I mean, going back to the incident that led to it. How's he done that? Like,
he was never standing up.
I know.
Like, obviously, he won that initial header, but then he was like, he was horizontal for the rest of it, which for a centre half to finish in such a way is beautiful.
It was just weird, wasn't it? He kind of had both feet off the floor and he like hooked it in. And it's just,
I'm pretty sure there's one point where he was like floating in midair for that as well. Like,
maybe he was.
I was pleased as well because it was a set piece where instead of like messing around with it and trying some ridiculous routine, they just chip the ball in the box and say, "Right, let's see what happens." And sure enough, win the second ball. Makes a nice change from Kone being caught offside, like standing down by the corner flag for some reason.
The set pieces have been a bit strange recently, so it was nice to see, them, in a score from a set piece. Again, Larsson involved. I think he was involved in the other set piece we've scored this season. Yana's eyes taken a lot of the corners, hasn't he?
And they've not been very
lolloped them into the box.
I think that's probably why he started to mess around with the routines and try something else, because if you're just lobbing the ball in and the goalkeeper's catching it every time, if you can't get your players to do anything other than that, then you've got to try something else, haven't you? And to be fair to Larsson, that's one of the better free kicks he's put in, because he's put some awful set pieces in.
Well, it went on one of our players' heads, which was,
it was in a dangerous area and everything, wasn't it?
If there's one team you want to try the conventional set piece against, it's a team that can't defend very well. There's no point playing around with them there. Just bang the ball in, and you know that they'll probably panic, which they did.
It's funny, isn't it, that you think about all this Ardyce stereotypes and not being able to defend set pieces is definitely not in the...
We struggled when he first came, mind. We didn't find it. He did have a really bad spell in that run up to Christmas.
Yeah, had a bad December. We had some tough games in that December.
No, but there was games we lost as well against some naff teams, like was it Watford got beat off Watford, and stuff like that.
Watford in a pretty rich vein of form at the time, though. To be fair, five on the bounce at that time, didn't they?
I remember people, kind of saying, "Is he the right man?" And all that kind of stuff, because the football wasn't good either. He's got it in him, Allardyce. Like, the just thing is with him, and one of the things you've got to be wary with in terms of thinking about whether we can stay up, is you'll always fancy him to keep his team up. Even with what they've gone through, you'll dig it out of something. So you even though we've absolutely possed him, when he was managing us, we took a couple of beatings, and it was that running at the end of the season that saved us. And if it clicks for them,
well, that's it. You've got there's only 2 points separating the bottom six teams, so nobody's out of it, everybody's in it. And a win next week, Sunderland could be out of the bottom three.
And I mean, Big Sam, you always think he is just going to go on a run and pull it out, but I have to say that was one of the worst home atmospheres I've come across in a long time.
They lost 7-8 at home this
season. And to be fair, it wasn't even when it was 4-0, even when Sunderland was just 1-0 up. One pass between the centre halves and they were right on the back, they wanted the long ball. And actually, I think that was a big factor in the third and fourth goal, when you say, Van Aanholt just can't defend, that's why he was out of position. But the third goal, the Crystal Palace right back is in the wingers, are just miles out of position, and that's because I think the crowd were on the back. They wanted them to just start like throwing bodies forward. So I'm interested to see how Palace get on for the rest of the season, because I think they'll do well to start grinding out results at home, because the atmosphere was absolutely atrocious. I was really surprised, because it's meant to be best atmosphere in the Premier League.
So all this narrative stereotype stuff, isn't it? Sunderland are the fans who leave early, and Palace are the greatest thing since the invention of ultras. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's the storyline you get. I mean, they did show some images of people leaving and stuff, but I don't think they made a huge deal out of it.
No, obviously, West Ham's the main culprits, aren't they, of the leaving early thing. But, it's all right, because they left Upton Park and they didn't want the new stadium, and it's a kick in the face for all the fans and all that, so it's fine for them to do that. And it's West Ham, and everybody, like one in two members of the national media support West Ham, don't they? So I think statistically. But I mean, going back to the game, and Dong, you mentioned the Ndong goal. You know, richly deserved, would you say, based on the impact that he had when he came back in the team? Maybe, you know, some people have underrated him, maybe, or not appreciated how important he is to Sunderland anyway.
Certainly. Well, we obviously knew African Cup of Nations was going to have a massive impact on us, but I don't think we realised how massive it was going to be. Those two results, Tottenham and Crystal Palace, you wonder if they, especially the Tottenham game, would have happened without Cornane and Dong. And then it makes you think back to the games previous against Stoke and West Brom. We might have lost those games, we might have not won those games, but would we have collapsed, especially against Stoke, in the way that we did? We'd have had Ndong putting pressure on their midfielders. You would have had Cornane then instead of Djilobodji, quite simply enough. I know it was a funny comparison to make on Saturday that, you know, we've replaced Van Aanholt with Oviedo and look at how both defences performed, but I think Corney coming in for Djilobodji is the main one, if we're being honest.
That game West Brom a couple of weeks ago, Djilobodji and Aanholt like made Matt Phillips look like Cafu. It was absolutely embarrassing. Every time West Brom got the ball, they were just chipping it onto that right flank. Van Aanholt was nowhere to be seen. Pappy, was bless him, was just had no idea what to do or where to put himself. And to me, it's absolutely, like you say, absolutely no surprise that you've put two actual defenders in there in their place, and suddenly you've kept two clean sheets.
Injuries, though, you know, O'Shea, yeah, you know, sounds like a hamstring, and Rodwell sounds like a hamstring. Shame, because is it the best little spell he's had at Sunderland?
There's been a couple of others,
months,
I think,
or?
Every now and then he pops up with these kind of 6-7, occasional 8 out of 10 performances that last 4 or 5 weeks, and then maybe a bit of a return,
injured,
or he gets injured. But certainly on Saturday, I feel like we hear this a lot, or that was his best game in a Sunderland shirt, but there were certain elements to his game, that there was a through ball he put in for Defoe in the first half
that was brilliant.
Really nice. The way he moved away from the player to actually create the space for himself to make that pass was like, I've never seen him move his feet that quickly in a Sunderland shirt. Like, his feet have always looked dead slow. But
he doesn't look petrified anymore. I think that's the big thing for me. He looks a little bit more comfortable. I thought the first half, other than that through ball for Defoe, I thought he was one of the players who was really struggling. When we were talking before about Sunderland couldn't keep the ball, Rodwell, to be honest, was probably the worst culprit of that. Really panicky. Couple of passes that he just bombed out for a throw in.
I remember one of them, actually, now you mention it.
But like you say, the big thing is he doesn't look scared to be playing for Sunderland anymore. He's taking a few more chances with his passing, and fair play to him. It sounded like might be quite a bad one, so fingers crossed that it's not as bad as it looks. But they seemed quite concerned after the game.
The only bonus, you don't want it, players injured, but at least they've brought Gibson in, and they've got like kind of Ndong back, and it's quite clear that without him in the team, we're a fraction of the amount of pressing he does in good areas. We'll win the ball higher up the pitch. Alright, his passing's a bit off sometimes, but you know, that's why you need someone next to him to do that for him. Like,
he's 22-year-old, and he's
the best midfielder we've got at the minute.
Oh, without
by
a doubt.
Miles.
You talked about that pressing as well. That got us the second goal. The way he's pressing that high up the field.
He was involved in the fourth as well. He won the ball, or he had it and he sprayed it wide to Januzaj, and then played that lovely through ball.
It was Oviedo who got the ball back with an excellent challenge.
Ndong had, no, was it the third one then? Ndong pushed it wide to Januzaj.
For the fourth.
He was involved. It was Larsson with the ball for the third, which was a fantastic ball.
It was a great ball.
Another one who's, you know, it was a hip problem. I don't know.
He was excellent, actually.
He did. Have a
but
good
the
game.
Reason he had a really good game was partly, in my opinion, because Ndong was in the team.
Yeah.
And also because they had nothing in midfield. Other teams, to be fair to Januzaj, I can understand he gets criticism, and I criticise him, and he does deserve it sometimes. Doesn't look like he's putting enough work in, etc. However, this moment in games, you watch him, he's surrounded by four players with no avenue, no angle to pass the ball. Saturday they gave him the freedom of it, and he just took the mickey, didn't he?
That's the one thing I've always said in defence of Yanazai, is that too often he's coming to the team and we've tried to use him like he's Victor Anichebe.
Yeah.
And just like ping long balls into his chest, and then people get annoyed when he gets pushed off it, and you think, well, look at the size of him, he's always going
to
get pushed off.
Mate, he can't be strong when he wants to be.
But he's strong in a different way. I think I agree with you in the sense that you can be strong on the turn when you've got the ball at your feet. Bringing the ball in at your chest with some burly centre-back at your back, it's a different skill set. He doesn't help himself with his body language and kind of his attitude and stuff. But when if you set the team up in a way that gives him that freedom, great. Because he's linked up with Defoe a few times now this season.
He looks to have a really good relationship with Defoe, doesn't he? That fourth goal showed that way. He knew where Defoe was going to be, and that was an inch-perfect ball the way he got that between Van Aanholt and I think it was Scott Dan.
It's one of those passes that it looks like a nothing pass.
Yeah.
But it's...
He knows it's more than that because he's got that brain. Yeah,
he's knocked it 40 yards across the floor. Like, in that position.
Well, the way I thought about it was, and I'm not meaning to be critical of Barini, which I often am, but... Think about if that Barini could not make that pass. For, just as one example, because he came in the team for him, Barini doesn't make that pass. He didn't even see it.
Yeah.
But the system we're playing at the minute doesn't suit Barini.
No.
It suits Yanazai because he can play behind Defoe. He can link players like Ndong to Defoe. He can link midfield to attack, defence to attack, whatever. Barini is either a striker, of which he's not a brilliant one because his finishing isn't the best, or he suits playing wide left in that 4-3-3 way when he flourished under Poirier, which was, 3 years ago now? So if we're playing this 3-5-1-1, whatever it is, there's no place in that for Barini, unless Defoe got an injury and you want to use him as the striker.
Well, I think it's 3-3 now. Two in that game. Yanazai set one goal up from the right, one from the left, and I can think of one recently where he played it from that central position. I can't remember.
Burnley was on.
He set up Defoe's goal against Burnley.
Was that the game?
But was from out wide.
Was he not?
The Watford game at home, he went through the middle.
And you think that's... I can't remember what system we played in that game, so it might be a bit of a...
He kind of played as a withdrawn kind of forward.
Which is kind of what he's playing in the current system.
But the thing is, he's got that freedom. Because with the playing five at the back. Exactly. 3-5-1-1 really, isn't it, that they're playing?
Yeah.
Or 5-3-1-1, whatever you
want to
call
it. Whatever it is, it works for him because the onus is not on him to defend, and he isn't very good at defending. So asking him to do it, you're asking... Yeah. It's like asking, I don't know, buying, Ibrahimovic and playing him on the left wing. It's obviously different, but, you're not going to do that. He's not going to track back. He's not that kind of player. You've just got to get used to it. You've got to accept it.
And positives on the, you had three players making the debut, essentially, at different points in the game, with Oviedo, who's got a lot of praise for his performance, and Gibson came on. I thought, personally, I was quite impressed with Gibson. I thought he was very comfortable on the ball. It was almost like he just settled it all down when he came on.
Kept it really simple. Yeah. Wasn't afraid to just play a simple 5-yard pass if that was the best option. And you're right, I thought he really, obviously, it's quite a good situation to come on with half an hour left when you're 4-0 up, but I thought he just kept it really simple, looked for the simple balls all the time, which is probably what we need. Someone who will put their foot on it and not just hoof it straight back up whenever they get it. So
he looked composed, and I thought Lescott did well when he came on. He didn't have loads to do, but we didn't look like we suffered for having...
He was clearing crosses quite well, which was the O'Shea job, really, wasn't it? Win the aerial challenges. Yeah. Looked all right at that, and you'd hope... If O'Shea is going to be out, that Lescott can step into that role for a few games. Obviously, match sharpness might be an issue on that. But
I think that might be the case with Gibson. Maybe I'm being unfair, but he looked... I agree. I think he did do well, actually. But he also looked a little bit sluggish, which is likely
he's only going to get the sharpness with playing.
Well, of course he is. Yeah, oh, yeah. But, I mean, in terms of throwing somebody in straight away... a game against someone like Southampton, for example, coming up, they're going to have a midfield that's... I mean, they're not doing that well in terms of results, but the midfield's always quite a good midfield. They've usually got good ball winner, I think Romeo's doing that job for them at the minute. Stephen Davis can play a bit of football. It's not necessarily in... I suppose there's no ideal game to start throwing people in, but you'd like to probably bring them off the bench a couple of times to just get them into it.
I think if Rodwell... I'd imagine Rodwell would... miss a few weeks, Gibson will come in. I mean, that's why he's there to play.
Of course,
They haven't brought him in to sit on the bench, so he'll come in and play. And, you know, we've carried a half-fit Rodwell in games not that long ago, where he's literally just come back in. He hasn't had any time to get back into it. He's just been straight in from the start, because over Christmas we only had 13 players or 12 players or whatever.
True.
So we've done it before, and with Ndong in there, can Ndong do maybe the work of one and a half people off the ball? He probably does that anyway. So I think I think would be all right if Gibson started personally.
I think with whatever injuries we've got, as long as we've got that spine of sort of Defoe and Ndong, Cornet, obviously we're in a lot of trouble, and we've got to perform slightly above expectations to get out of it. But as long as we've got that spine, we've got something in the team. And like you say, maybe we can carry a half-fit player like Gibson. For me, it's just building the team around those three. We've been over-reliant on Defoe for so long. The fact that we've now got someone at the back looking like he did last season when he was quality, and Ndong, who's kind of blossoming now, I suppose. If you can keep that spine, the team doesn't look absolutely gone in like a 15-point, 19-point season team. It looks a team with fight and a bit of quality about it as well.
Actually, I was thinking about the 19-point thing and thinking you could probably apply that logic to Palace, because they've got this team of players who look like they should be nowhere near where they are, but there doesn't seem to be any way to stop the slide.
I mean, there's still such a classic Pardew hangover. He's just gone in and the big voices in the dressing room, the good leaders in the dressing room, didn't fancy that, bombed them out. You know, you had an axe and that, brought players in, and there was no leaders on that pitch.
Especially when you spend 10 million quid on centre half in Tompkins, you know, you spend 14 million quid on Jeffrey Schlupp's the left back, isn't he?
12
he's a like left yeah. winger left
he's bought,
back
he's bought two he's bought two
but he's playing if he's playing three at the back, what do you need two wing backs for?
It's crazy. If Big Sam takes them down, the money they've spent in January, it'll be Sacco, 100 grand a week. It's the guy's not match fit, it's unbelievable business.
Did you see that story about the Jenkinson and Schlupp thing?
Yeah.
Why Jenkinson?
No.
Well, Jenkinson was going to sign for Palace, then found out that Jeffrey Schlupp was on 56 grand a week and he was only offered 35.
Yeah.
So he decided not to move.
I think I heard
this
on...
What the hell?
On some podcast,
56 grand for Jeffrey Schlupp.
Well, what I think is interesting as well about their team is it's not just the big spending in January. It's how much for Benteke?
And Townsend.
How much for Kabay? Townsend. Players like this who... You see it happen, don't you? These players that are going to come in and kind of take you to another level. And I remember when Kabay signed for them, and they were all like, you know, there was a lot of excitement about it, and I was saying they'd finished 9th or 10th that season, and I was thinking 10 million quid, 29-year-old, 100 grand a week, is he going to change you from a 9th place team to one that finishes in the top 6? Absolutely not. It's obviously not a direct correlation. I think they would have done better with him still on the field than with him off, because Joe Ledley's an absolute cart horse. But it's a bad use of resources, and I think there's something we know all about, because we've made very bad use of resources recently. And you look at Palace, and it's interesting, isn't it? The best player's probably punching, or has been punching. He doesn't look as good
most
at the minute.
Most consistent, you know. It's probably equivalent to like a Catamol, where you can always rely on that player, even, you know, because he's gonna pull his socks up. And
but he's not one of those players like Benteke, Townsend, big money signing. Even Zahar coming back. It's like a big name in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like Tompkins, 10 million, like you say. I mean, that header he missed.
I know.
That was a disgrace, that.
Somebody missed a header like that at the stadium recently. I can't remember who were playing, but or it was exactly the same, and they missed a chance. Might have been Watford, actually. I think it was.
It was awful, wasn't it?
And a bit of luck you need, don't it?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, as well. Don't know why it comes to mind thinking about like that, but Billy Jones is there. He's doing well, again.
Well,
I just like him. I just there's something about him I like.
Honest, hard working Billy.
I think you know, you can't. Which I think it was the fourth goal. He's in the box, isn't he?
He's waiting for the pass.
His eyes are lighting up.
He challenged the keeper obviously for the first one as well, getting amongst it.
There's something about him. I just like. I know he had a dip in form for a bit.
I suppose he's a bit of like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
No, even during this current run, even when he's come good, he had a little dip again when we went generally bad. And but when he's got like other good players around him at the back and that, I think he's a good. Like,
well, you know, he's relatively safe, isn't he? When he's playing near his maximum, he's relatively comfortable. And like you say, he's dependable, isn't he? In a team that's doing okay. I mean, 2 clean sheets in a week. You know, for that back line, essentially. Well, obviously, Mankiw, actually, I thought he did pretty well against his best game in ages.
Yeah, he did.
Probably his second best game he's had after his debut. But I guess we should talk about Oviedo, because...
Oh, he was brilliant.
You know, I thought he started a bit slow. He looked a bit like he hadn't played in a while. Yeah. And then after about 10 minutes or so, he just seemed to start getting the measure. He didn't get roasted or anything, obviously, in that, but he just looked a bit clumsy. And then all of a sudden, as the game went on, as we got better, you could see his confidence.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, for a left-back to win the ball in the centre circle for that build-up of that fourth goal, you know, that's what you need. It's because he's sensing, right, we're into these now. And, like, he's gone in and nicked that ball off them, and they, you know, backsides are gone, haven't they?
I think the biggest compliment you can make to him is that Palace just gave up. Gave up going down our left in the second half. The tactic was, right, we've brought Townsend on, let's go down the left, because we're getting no joy on the right. Because Oviedo, I know Zaha had been given a bit of a kicking by Larsen, which rattled him a bit, which...
Great.
It was great.
No, but honestly, I was going to bring that up, actually. I just, you know, you're absolutely right that Oviedo was good, but first 15 minutes, he was really struggling.
Yeah.
And Larsen was never more than 5 yards away from him.
Yeah.
And that's what experience does. And that's why I think, you know, Larsen, for me, is still, in the current situation, one of the first.
He's not getting enough praise for it either.
Because he picked up on that straight away. He could see that was a problem. And, you know, bless him, nearly got himself sent off for it.
I didn't think the first one was a yellow one.
No,
but the second one was.
He could easily have gone for that, having got a yellow for the first one.
He should have sent him off based on
that. It's Mariner. We've got to take. Not only did we get away with, I don't think it was a foul, but, you know, Mariner. He can't wait to give stuff against us. Get away with that one on the keeper. And he actually gave a free kick for a foul on our keeper. I mean, it wasn't the exact same thing.
Actually, no, it was offside. He gave offside.
Oh, it was offside, sorry. Yes, he was going to let it go.
Yeah, I think he did let it go. And then,
but to get that much out of Mariner, I mean, there was a time you just expected to lose when he refereed us and some dodgy decision.
He was a referee for the Norwich game last season where we beat him 3-0 at their place.
Oh, aye, was he? I didn't realise.
So, you know, maybe, you know, he's the man now.
The worm's turn. Is he like our
Mike Dean? Like how Mike Dean always gives penalties to, is it Spurs? Like, is Andrea Mariner our one of them who always gives us,
he'll
like, great decisions?
He'll be celebrating our goals when he's done it.
like arms up like that.
Yeah. Good lad.
Talk amongst yourselves, because we've got some questions. Is it a favourite then? That would have been good, wouldn't it?
Would have been clever.
Well, you were there. So I don't know. Speaking about some of these players, I find when I watch online or on television, I can't sometimes appreciate people's positional sense and stuff as well, because you obviously can't see what's happening off the ball. So in terms of that, I mean, what did you think about, like, I suppose Les Scott when he came on, and like Oviedo more generally throughout the game?
I think,
was he well positioned?
Oviedo was absolutely excellent. I can't speak highly enough of him. And the contract, sometimes I think Van Aanholt might have been even worse than we all thought.
that's what I came away thinking.
Because I think just because he was sort of our player and he scored the odd goal, I think we maybe, I think he might even be, and I know we all thought he was pretty bad, but I think he might actually be even worse. That fourth goal, you watch it back and he's just walking around. He's got no idea that Jan Zay's behind
him. No positional sense.
Oh, unbelievable. So I thought Oviedo was good. Lescott's just a case of, like, you can't leave him one-on-one with someone. You can't have him with his back turned, the ball over the top. If you play him in a back three and you defend him quite deep, then I think he'll do fine because he's got that experience. Reads the game quite well. Crosses he dealt with really well. But you have to say, like, you'd worry about him getting left one-on-one with anyone.
On a similar kind of point, though, Dineo seemed to be quite settled and have a nice game kind of under the radar for once as well.
I think he's done well against Spurs as well.
It's when Dineo was good, it was that midfield role and it was a bit of a... I know it sounds daft, but it was a bit obvious, whereas now he just seems to be settled and just going under the radar.
Talk about that defensive midfield role that players seem to do so well in for Sunderland. There must be a reason for that. It can't be...
Because we're under pressure all the time, that's why.
Or the fact that you've got more time on the ball.
It does help.
If you look at back, you know, when Catmull played there, apart from when he messed up a couple of times, he did generally okay. Key played there and did well.
Bridcut a couple of times.
And then you had, obviously, Kirchhoff.
Kirchhoff, I think, is the difference is he's a player, when he's looked good in that position, he hasn't just looked good, he's actually affected the game in a positive manner going forward in a way those other players have never been able to do.
Key kind of had a bit of that, yeah.
But Key then moved forward and still was able to do that higher up the pitch because he can beat a man. Kirchhoff can't play any higher up the pitch because he can't beat a man.
And to be fair, could be back relatively soon as well with Rodwell being out. That could be a boost.
Well, yeah, and you obviously Cattermole coming back, Pickford as well. That's an interesting one.
Minone's alright at the minute. Two clean
at the minute. So.
Yeah. But he's looked very solid.
Thing is with Pickford, though, you get his distribution.
Pickford's a match winner as well. Yeah. Yeah. I think Vito's a good keeper. I love Vito as well. I think, you know, we've been lucky to have him. I think he's a great servant and all that, but Pickford wins your points on his own.
Yeah,
I
don't know. You look at the Bournemouth game this season.
I'm certainly not making an argument that Minone is a better goalkeeper. Yeah. I just mean he's a confidence guy. It took him a while to come back in. I think now that he has built the confidence up, at least you don't have to rush Pickford. You can give him maybe an extra week or two to just make sure he's 100%. The last thing you want is him coming back early and another injury. So, you know, manage it better, basically.
Yeah. You've got to be ruthless, haven't you? If your best players are available, you put them in.
Yeah. But what we've had to do is put players in when they're not ready, I think, sometimes. In a way, like Kirchhoff's a prime example. I'm not saying that the injury he picked up was related to the one previous, but it's all about your overall fitness, isn't it, right? And I think we've got a situation with some more players now we've brought in who, all right, you might not look at and think, oh, great, you know, they're getting match winners or whatever, but they can do a job for you. And it's not like playing Honeyman, who, I mean, when he come on against Spurs, he looked like a competition winner. It was one of the worst performances I've ever seen in a Sunderland shirt.
You want to be kind, don't you? Because you're like, he's only a young lad and all that.
But no one's been as kind to Ndong, who's the same age or younger than him.
He's younger than him.
And he is, light years ahead. Based on that, I mean, it's a bit unfair. You know, he's probably a bit overawed. But that's what I was saying to a mate, actually. But you can't judge him on that. If he's being used as a Premier League player and he's 22-year-old, he can't be overawed. He has to be ready.
Look at stuff like Romelu Lukaku's 23.
Seven That's languages. Ridiculous.
It's absolutely insane.
That is crazy. I did not know that.
23? Like, he's going to be the best striker in the world when he's like 26.
No, but I don't think I think he's plateaued. I think this is his level. I think I don't see him getting better and better. I see him go, he has a really good spell, and then
I think his finishing's ridiculous.
Oh, no, he's a brilliant player, but he does go through barren patches, like... I think he's an excellent player anyway.
He's younger than me. Like, that's fucking, sorry.
That's younger mad. Than you.
But that's mad. Like, I look at him and he's massive. And then I look at myself in the mirror and I just want to cry.
I know.
Unrelated reasons to Romelu Lukaku, but still.
But look at Denier as well. There's another example,
21.
You know, like, I'm not trying to have a massive dig at Honeyman and stuff, but I'd not want to be looking at him and going, yeah, we're going to rely on you to keep us up. Gooch, on the other hand, he's busy.
Yeah. I can come see him and do a job, can't
he? He's never once looked overawed. He's not played 10 out of 10 every game, but when he gives you a 6 out of 10, he's not going to just scoop the ball off the pitch.
Going back to what you were saying, you know, about giving players time, interesting that Friday night he obviously played for the under-23s. You know, we had the players, so Moyes wasn't forced into carrying him, you know, including him on the bench just in case we needed him. He got a chance to have another game, get his fitness up. He might do the same. He might think, you know what, I'd be best off sticking Honeyman on the bench for the Southampton game with the injuries, say, and then just, you know, letting Gooch have another week, and then when he's ready...
He knows he can use Honeyman if he really needs to.
But speaking on a similar level, we're talking about the Januzaj injury. Could Kasri come in to fill that? I think he'd go for Barini every day of the week. But it would make more sense. Yeah, unfortunately, exactly. It would make more sense Kasri to play the number 10 role. Moyes doesn't like how he doesn't work as hard, but... You wouldn't have
more,
to like Januzaj.
More to it than just work rate, because Januzaj's work rate is not exactly.
I don't think it's about work rate in games at all. On the training ground, what have you? It's an interesting one with Kasri though, because sometimes I would use Kasri more than Moyes does, but everyone was raving about him in the African Cup of Nations. Now good are yours and all this, and I watched one of the games Tunisia played, and Kasri was just. He won a penalty, so everyone was going, "Oh, Kasri's played for Tunisia. He's won a penalty. Oh, get him home, get him in the team." I watched that game and some of the passes were so abysmal. Mm. And it's just like, you know, little 5-yard passes out to the right back where he tries to like cut across it and like slice it and just like, and it's one of those where I think as a manager it must just be absolutely infuriating because I just don't know where you would start improving him. but do you know what I mean though? Because you could never trust him really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously the flip side of that is he can turn a game in a minute like we saw at Chelsea and what have you, but
I think when you've got, you know, a player like that who last season he probably had a bit of change in the bank, didn't he? This season it hasn't worked, and when he's had his chance he hasn't really impressed at all. So I mean, I like him, but you know, I think at the moment when other players are in form and we've got a more fully fit squad, then fair enough. I think there was more of an argument to get him involved earlier in the season when firstly we weren't winning games and he wasn't really involved, and you know, we weren't changing things. So, but at the moment, I think if you're going to play one off the front, and you want a replacement for Januzaj, then Kasri's your replacement. But I think you'd probably rather put Barini in and then try and change the system.
I think you'd try Gooch there actually, before Kasri as well, which would probably be a better shout than Barini. It's more of a natural position for him.
I think the point I'm trying to make with Kasri is that if you play him, you have to make massive sacrifices with the rest of your team, and you have to accept that you're going to lose a lot of other things by putting Kasri in. Which is fine if you're 12th, 13th, that's fine. But in Sunderland's position,
last season he was a menace, wasn't he? Like
he was a wasp.
Yeah,
a bit. They're buzzing around all the time, wasn't he? Didn't give anyone a minute on the ball.
It's just weird. But it's weird how things can change.
Well, I think Moyes is obviously, I think, like you said, the training ground guy. I think he likes all the training pitch stuff, right? And if he's not getting it out of him there, he just won't countenance it. A bit like, I don't know, you kind of a hardline PE teacher or something in a way. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It can sometimes be frustrating because I think Keane was... similar in some ways, where you used to play Murphy all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and everyone was like, well, what? Like, why?
£6 million player down Murphy at 33.
33 year old, is he? Didn't even know he was that old. It's remarkable. He's better than Mitrovic.
Same age as me. and I'm better than Mitrovic.
Kevin Kyle was better than Mitrovic.
It would have been all right if he hadn't had a zip injury like Kyle. I think that really did derail him, didn't it?
That's definitely a definite tangent, that. Going from 4-0 win at Palace to defending Kevin
Kyle. Scored at Palace, didn't
scored
he?
In both playoff games. Yeah. Scored at home. And Quinn-esque his goal was at...
This is getting even more tangent.
It was a classic ball over the head of the defender, chest down, half volley. Classic Quinn. So I think he got about 15, 16 goals that season, and then he actually got like a degenerative hip problem, so he was lucky he actually came back to play at all. He was out for 18 months. So
his career's done now, isn't it?
Then he nearly burnt his knackers, didn't he?
He did, on some milk. Baby milk, aye.
He did, that happened.
I'm just spilt
milk on himself on his ball bag.
I remember once I was in.
There was no point crying over it either.
Well, I bet there was.
there definitely will have been.
I was walking through the bridges and he was out and about with Stephen Elliott. Right. It was just nice to see them. going into WH Smiths together, right. Looking at some station.
I saw them at Nando's once together.
No, Elliott was Nando's even around then?
Yeah, it was.
Could only be better if you saw like. O'Shea, Coney and Danea walking in, like, holding a line as I went in as well.
Yeah. That'll be mint.
Kyle, like, took down the piri piri salt on his chest.
And, like, I seen Ben in Nando's, unsurprisingly. Yeah. He loved it, didn't he? It was in the Metro Centre, that, though.
Was that weird, him and Myler? They loved
Campbell as well. He
footballers.
Was, yeah.
Because they used to get this thing, right? Didn't he used to get this card?
Only allowed to eat chicken.
Yeah, so if you banged on about it enough, that we need to stop talking about this anyway.
Are you getting hungry, like?
I am really hungry, actually.
I'm a bit hungry. I'm not going to Nando's, though.
No.
What are you going to have?
Some pork chops.
Ooh!
Pork chops, bit of salad.
We need to pull this back round.
I'm trying to eat better this week, because after Christmas...
You need to stop talking about your eating.
I've just decided I've just gone wrong, really.
100% anyway, need to move on from that.
Further wrong. quick question. Stephen Goldsmith, you know him?
I wish I did.
Yeah, he said, he asked a question that he wanted. Can't keep him out, can you, when he's not here? About Larson, but we kind of answered the question, so sorry, Stephen. Unlucky. Turn up next time. Neil asks, do the lads reckon Wadwell's tackle v Spurs is this season's version of the Chelsea League Cup quarter-final pitch invader under Poirier in 2013-14?
I saw
you
him
ask that. I was thinking about that when it happened.
No, well, I wasn't, but it's a good shot.
I thought it was more like when I was at the game and it happened, I thought it was more like Kone's tackle on Yaya Toure.
There was a little bit of that.
But then was Kone's tackle on Yaya Toure the pitch invader moment?
No, I would say maybe it was halfway between.
Made me think of Catamol on Tioti in Derby at St James's that we drew 1-1.
Or Catamol on Janmaat in the Derby.
Brilliant.
Yeah, because Janmaat was going to Catamol, wasn't he? Remember that? And after about 20 seconds...
He just got put in his place.
Yeah.
I have to... My one regret at the weekend that Catamol wasn't there to play against Van Holten. That's the one thing that I would have liked to have seen that we didn't quite get.
I know no one really had to get into him because he was just rubbish.
Yeah, so
just wasn't there.
Right, yeah.
Sure enough, hid from the ball for 90 minutes, apart from when it was, you know, at the byline. Absolutely atrocious.
He can't pass the ball. The thing is, when people think about him being good going forward, he can't pass a ball 5 yards.
I've said this, like, he can't cross a road, can he?
But he's all right if he's drilling it along the deck, right, into the box. That's fine. But, like, he can't cross it properly. And he can't. When more infuriatingly for me, anyway, is he can't pass a ball 5 yards.
No, he can't. When he's coming up, so when he would be going to run like towards a penalty area, and he'd have like a few runners,
he'd just
either nobody or like completely mishit the pass. All of his crosses were generally, his good ones were like right on the byline inside the penalty
smashed
area.
Smashed along the deck usually.
Right. So he can't like cut backs. He can't really. He'd never really get down the line.
You know why? Because it's more instinctive. You've got no time to think. You're running full pelt and you just put your foot through it.
Which is why his finishing's good. It's his goals are usually like quickly taken efforts.
He misses loads as well, didn't he? Whacks him over the bar from... Didn't he put one out of the stand on the weekend?
Oh, he got one up really high,
It must have been near.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Aye. To be fair, that was like a volley from like 40 yards.
Tell you what, Patrick, just calm down. Don't hit it.
No, keep doing it.
But do it more now.
Keep doing it. Compound the problem. That's what we want. Lots of issues.
Agent Van Aanholt.
We're
all signing up.
Yeah. Agent Sam, Agent Van Aanholt. Have we got any other ex-players at other teams in there?
Wickham's there. He's injured, but he's probably been a bad influence.
Fraser
Campbell. Behind the scenes.
Agent Campbell.
Fraser Campbell's there. Yeah, because we saw him before the game, and like he walked past him, and we were like, got about Fraser Campbell. Bless him.
We've just mentioned him talking about Nando's as well.
England
and didn't actually fail to make the connection that he plays for Crystal Palace.
He's been lurking around like benches in the Premier League for sort of 10 years.
Well, Crystal Palace's bench. He had a good run for us when before he did his knee, didn't he?
Right, he was crap though, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't.
Ran around a lot.
It used to annoy me because Bentner would get like loads of jip that Campbell wouldn't get. And Bentner was an infinitely better player, in my opinion. Although now, Bentner's clogging it up for Forest while Campbell's still in the Premier League, so maybe I was wrong.
If you could give the attitude of Fraser Campbell the ability of Nicholas Bentner, you'd have a half-decent mid-table Premier League player.
You'd have Ibrahimovic.
I think you'd have a player who would sign for somebody in the last half hour of deadline day on loan. That's what you'd have for a bottom five team.
And score against the Mags. Yeah, and then smash up all their cars.
Right, on that note.
But anyway, are we finished, do you think?
I don't know. How long you've been doing this for?
Too long.
That's time.
Just generally.
Never too long for a 4-0 win.
Yeah. So yeah, that's crazy, that, isn't it? 4-0. And now we've actually, it was just briefly, I haven't looked at the other teams' fixtures, but when you look at the fixtures, last 14 games, I was thinking we've probably got Everton, Man City, Man United and Arsenal. And then the rest of them, I think they might all be like bottom half.
Still got Bournemouth, Leicester, still got Hull,
yeah,
still
Bournemouth,
got Swansea.
Leicester, Hull, Swansea.
But pretty much every team apart from Chelsea are unreliable.
Mm.
Like Arsenal, God knows what'll happen there. Everton will probably do us when you, yeah, if they
come into form, so we all seem to play them.
But we're catching Southampton when they're not in form.
Yeah.
So that
how many points has Southampton got? 25.
And they've got no defenders either.
They might sign this fella today, Caceres or something.
He's not fully fit though, apparently. Is he?
He hasn't played for a long time.
Yeah. Van Dijk's injured and they've sold Font. Like they've got.
They've made a big mistake, haven't they? They've made a terrible mistake.
Made a huge mistake. But, that,
they've got they've got 27 points. They're above Bournemouth, who Bournemouth are definitely not.
How many points have Bournemouth got? 26.
26. They're not completely out.
No, they're
7
not.
Points. I mean,
with Bournemouth, you look at them and
they're not a good, very good team, are they?
But where's the leaders in that team as well? It's probably Jack Wilshere, who's one of the biggest bottle jobs in the league. They're managed by a child / leisure centre manager. And they lose to awful teams like us and Palace.
The thing about Bournemouth is, though, everyone else is talking, oh, they're not out of it yet. And then they'll go and win like 6-4 at Stamford Bridge or something. And like a 4-0 will get like a hat-trick.
Well, Callum Wilson's done his cruciate, hasn't he?
Yeah. Christ. Again.
He's out, so it will be a 4-0. Has done the classic, signed for a lot of money, everyone should have signed him and then just go off the radar, really.
They've got a lot of players like that. I think we've talked about it before, because it's interesting when you look at clubs like them and Burnley, that don't seem to be able to build on what they've got with added quality, because it's all about this sort of unity and team strength. And they add players. I mean, Burnley haven't exactly done it, really, but like Bournemouth have certainly spent money on players who've either not really done much, or you just think, have you really improved the team then?
And you look at some of the players who've left actually to drop down a division, and Elphick went to Villa, didn't he? Obviously Richie's gone there.
Richie would improve Bournemouth probably.
Yeah, he probably would.
It's interesting though, because it goes the other way as well though, that you take players out of a working system and put them in another team and it actually shows them up a bit. So Elphick's an example. When I was covering Cardiff earlier in the season, they played Villa, and Elphick was suddenly, you looked at him and you're like, actually, you're a pretty terrible footballer. Like, just can't pass, positioning not very good, so slow. And he's probably the flip side. He's probably someone who's actually has been held together by playing in like a good system.
See, have you not? How many bad back passes do Bournemouth concede goals from? Seems
I tell you
week.
What, I'm convinced this comes back to the goalkeeper. I don't understand
the
that.
Bad Bournemouth back pass podcast.
What is going on? What is this conversation?
No, it was another one at the weekend. And
bring back
when I've seen them, it seems like every time when I see them on the telly, they give a goal away. It was that Steve Cook decides to pass it straight to a striker in the penalty area.
I'm
it can't be a coincidence.
It's out of Boric. I don't think he shouldn't get a game in League Two, never mind the Premier League.
What, the holy goalie? As it used to be known.
I mean, he's a good laugh and all that, but
you're damn right. Yeah.
He is
Banner
a good 10, ability 3.
And the Celtic fans love him, like they'd still have him back, I think, as a backup. Yeah.
But I'd have him in for the crack, but just not for the.
Speaking of Celtic, did you see their? I don't know. I think it was the fifth goal. Mikel Lustig doing a rebound in the box to settle Dembele after about 50-60 passes.
Like the best goal that's ever been scored in Scottish football.
Honestly, it's
great.
There's a moment where Scott Brown rolls this midfield, and you're like, if Scott Brown's doing that to you, you've got to retire.
Well, you've got to. Just playing Scotland.
No, you're not even good enough for the SPL. Yeah.
That's a day. That's it. That is the worst day of your life, isn't it? I'm not even good enough for the SPL.
Craig Gordon was involved in that goal with like one of the many passes there. Yeah. I was just watching it because this Rabona is just. It's absurd.
It's
the right back
is
Rabona.
So unnecessary. That's the beauty of it. He just doesn't have to do it.
But aren't they like 4-2 up already or something like that when he does it?
There's some like 31 points clear at the top of the table.
It's 27, I think.
Is it?
It's mental, like.
Anyway.
Be like us next season.
So, we'll finish there then. But so we'll be back. I won't be back actually next Monday, so Stephen better be able to do. Stop banging on the table, man.
Well, it's because everyone's ready to go home.
But you've been doing it all show.
Listeners. No, I haven't.
You have?
That's bollocks.
Listen back to
this. I mean, lies.
Well, he's already dropped the F-bomb, so I can't. I'm not going back to it.
Like, come on, please end this.
Stephen's killed himself by now, I think. He's not going to be here next week
this
either.
He's going to look at the runtime and be like,
it's going to be me and Craig. We've taken over the podcast.
Craig,
Gorilla Podcast.
Only a fool.
I'll leave it. Craig, obviously, quoting Patrick Van Aanholt there. please can we end this?
Yeah.
And we will end this. Thank you for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.